First Baptist Church of Redmond, May 23rd, 2021, Ecclesiastes, Chapter 2, Confused in Life, Confident in God.
There is nothing better for a person than to eat and drink, and show himself some good in his trouble. This too I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. Please be seated.
We'll come back to this verse because, well, it doesn't say what you think it says. Confused in life? Confident in God. Ecclesiastes 2, 18 through 36. Who is that face? It's a famous face. It's Marcus Pearson. Minecraft. Microsoft paid $2.5 billion to acquire Mojang MB, the Swedish company that created the worldwide gaming sensation Minecraft. The deal made Marcus Pearson a billionaire with a personal net worth, of $1.3 billion. Pearson promptly outbid Beyonce and Jay-Z for a Beverly Hills mega mansion, a $70 million home that's been described as an overwhelming sensory experience. The listing read, outfitted with insane amenities at M&M Towers, bars, and a movie theater, and 15 bathrooms, each equipped with what we're told, toilets that cost $5,600 each. But on August 29th, 2015, Pearson posted a series of tweets that captured his gnawing sense of unhappiness and dissatisfaction. Within 5 minutes, 4:48 a.m., the problem with getting everything is you run out of reasons to keep trying, and human interaction becomes impossible due to imbalance. At 4:50, he posted, "Hanging out in Ibiza with a bunch of friends and partying with famous people, able to do whatever I want, and I've never felt more isolated." At 4:52 a.m., he tweeted, "When we sold the company, the biggest effort went into making sure the employees got taken care of, and they all hate me now." At 4:53, his final post, a.m., "Found a great girl, but she's afraid of me and my lifestyle, and went with a normal person instead. So I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me." Under the sun was used four times in the first part of our book, but it's used five times in these six verses. Futility, expressions of futility conclude verses 19, 21, 23, and 26. I hated. Solomon is being ironic here. He's already said that his heart was pleased from his labors in earlier in chapter 2. What's the reason he hated all his labors? He wonders, what will the one following after me and takes over do with what I leave? Do you have collections? Some people collect game pieces. Some people collect Legos. What, if anything, do you collect? This is the audience participation part of the show. Coins? I collect a few coins. Yep, bells. It's becoming passé. I used to have a big stamp collection, stamps from all parts of the world, even Russia. But we lost it when we moved. It was a big disappointment to me. Nobody can do it like you. Nobody has the tastes that you have. Nobody else has the mastered making meatballs like you do. Nobody else can cook like you. And what will happen to your traditions? What will happen to your collections? What will happen to the things you think are special? That's what Solomon's pondering. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool, yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is futility. They say, I'll read it. They say behind every successful man there's a good woman, and I've got 1,000 of them. He had something to do with his problems. He broke the law and went after the false gods of his wives. He ruined it himself. He knew better. He knew what to do. Where was the wisdom he prided himself with? He chose not to follow his God. And he's suffering the consequences. When there is a person who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then gives his legacy to one who has not labored for it, this too is futility and a great evil. He, as we all too often do, did not see clearly what he was doing. He overestimated himself. He thinks his quote-unquote legacy was all good. He didn't do anything wrong. I think that unlike his father David, who spoiled his children, his mistake was to ignore his family. I have a quote from 1 Kings 14:21. Now Rehoboam, son of Solomon, reigned in Judah. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he became king, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which the Lord had chosen from all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. And his mother's name was Naamah the Ammonitess. David spoiled his children, so much so that Ammon tried to take over the kingdom. His mother was one of the foreign wives that Solomon had married. The revised version, she's only called the Ammonitess. It doesn't list her name. In fact, even before Solomon died, his kingdom began to slip from his fingers. People rebelled, people were unhappy, and people began to not follow him as king. For what does a person get in all his labor and all his striving when she labors under the sun. It was not just the loss of Solomon's reward that he hated, but the work itself. The first problem is that our work will be somebody else's reward. Are you leaving your children an inheritance? Are you leaving them your collection? Ha ha ha. Are you leaving them what it matters to you? Be it a car or a truck or a van or a travel trailer or something else. You could even leave them your house. Because all his days, his activity is painful and irritating. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is futility. The second problem is that the work itself invests in toil and trouble. Work also makes mental demands. Mind is the word for heart. There's a reason why Valium instilled the number one prescription drug in America. People ask, what good is sleep? Proper sleep habits have been long understood as essential, but recently, a research team released its findings that shine more light on the natural processes of our body as we undergo sleep. They found out that during the hours we are unconscious, the brain takes advantage of the opportunity and shrinks the synapses that control the brain's neurons by up to 20%. Your brain is smaller when you sleep. The reason the researchers presume is to remove inconsequential information and make room for new memories. Without this processes, the synapses would become overloaded with information and not be able to cope. Quote, it is critical to have pruning back at night so that the huge information encoded by temporary synapses during the day won't overwhelm the brain, says Russell Foster, a sleep researcher at the University of Oxford. Another quote, pruning ensures that only the most important information is retained, unquote. The study also noted that neurological activity is likely only one of the many housekeeping items that take place during a good night's sleep, emphasizing how important rest truly is. I'd like to retranslate this verse. I don't know why it's traditionally mistranslated. Solomon finally mentions his God, but he mentions him as an afterthought. He speaks of the spiritual values that are found above. Under the sun? No, spiritual values are with God. The above verse really says, it is not a good thing inherent in a man that he's able to eat and drink. Or, I have the complete verse. There is nothing worthwhile for a man but to eat and drink and afford himself enjoyment with his means. And even that, I noted, comes from God. The thought of the verses is true enjoyment is possible, but it is not within humanity's power to give it to himself. Even things such as a low scale of things, such as eating and drinking and finding good, cannot be enjoyed unless God grants it. That's the point of Ecclesiastes, the point of Solomon, the point that is making his testimonies about futility. Because unless God blesses, unless God gives a good thing, unless God gives the ability to just eat and drink, it's frustrating. It's futile. You'll never enjoy it. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? Verse 25 makes much better sense when read with this meaning. Who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? Have enjoyment. Solomon had experienced no joy in a life apart from God. No enjoyment is possible without him. For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting, so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is futility and striving after the wind. God's gifts are frequently dependent on our attitude and outlook. Are we thankful? Are we thankful for the things that God gives us? When they are set before the judgment of God, some are found to be good. Why? Because they please him. Good gains its meaning from the contrast to sinners. The good are not ones who are habitual sinners. God grants them wisdom and knowledge and joy. It must be able to be found from life, from God, for us. This means that enjoyment from living is a gift from God. A great contrast exists between the person who's good in God's sight and the habitual sinner. Life of the sun is passing away. Are you familiar with this book? I've read this book. In the best-selling book, Into Thin Air, John Krakauer tells the story of the ill-fated expedition to the summit of Mount Everest in 1996. In the book, he mentions a member of the expedition named Yusuko Namba. Ms. Namba was a 46-year-old Japanese Fed ex-employee with a passion for climbing. She was an accomplished climber, having reached the summits of 7 of the largest mountains on the planet. The only one left for her to conquer was Everest. She desperately wanted to get the top. This was her goal, so much that Krakauer, who was also a member of the expedition, tells how, quote, Yusuko was totally focused on the top. It was almost as if she was in a trance. She pushed extremely hard, jostling her way past everyone to the front of the line. She wanted to get to the top of Everest. Later that day, she made it. She accomplished her goal. She was the oldest person ever to make it the highest point of the world. Later that afternoon, however, Yusuko and a large number of the other climbers were caught in a terrible blizzard. As the icy winds blew, Yusuko succumbed to the exhaustion of her climb and froze to death. Yusuko Namba died agonizingly close to the time and location where she had gained her greatest prize. This helps explain her tragic mistake. Yusuko's goal had been to get to the top of the mountain. What she wanted most was to stand at the top of the world, and all Japan cheered when she did. But this was the wrong goal, and a frequently and sometimes fatal mistake climbers make. The goal of climbing should never be to get to the top of a summit. Successful climbers know that the goal is not to get to the top. What's the goal? To get back down to the bottom. The tragedy is Yusuko accomplished her goal. Against incredible odds, she made it to the top of the mountain. But as she poured her energy out to the top, she did not save enough strength to make it back down. Yusuko failed because she adopted the wrong goal.